Hey everybody, it's Josh Rutledge, your co-host for Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to support us more, please head over to our website, fearscapepodcast.com. There you can click on store and browse some really awesome t-shirts and maybe pick a couple up, or even go to our Patreon page and see how you can support us monthly. We love bringing you awesome content just as much as you like listening to it. Enjoy the show.
Hello. I'm so glad you could join us. I hope you brought your blanket to hide under. The spooky crew is going to discuss things and events from other realms. Ghosts, cryptids, aliens. Be sure to hold your blanket extra tight as the boys take you deep into the Fearscape.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. My name is Stefan Gearhart, your host for the evening, and joined, as always, is my co-hostess with the most hostess, Mr. Josh Rutledge.
Why, thank you very much.
Yeah, I didn't mean to call you a hostess, but you're gender fluid, it's fine.
Or I was thinking cupcake.
You are a cupcake. Look at you. Oh, man, you're so filled with cream. Love it. Oh, I just want to put some frosting on you.
I just want to eat you right up.
I just want to eat you right up. Oh, yeah. So it's going to get weird today.
Yeah.
Just going to let you know, I'm hyper. I've been off my ADHD medication for like a week and a half because I'm getting some new kind, and I'm like bouncing off the walls, dude.
Well, I probably shouldn't have given you that chocolate-covered coffee bean.
Oh, coffee bean? No wonder I'm bouncing, too. Plus, hanging with your girls, I'm like, wait, guys, what are we doing? but yeah, so we're going to be talking about the infamous Hellfire Club. Not the one from Marvel Comics, but the actual Hellfire Club is what we're going to be talking about today. So get ready for that. I just quickly wanted to... before we even get into anything, I quickly wanted to talk about last week's episode with Andrea Perrin.
Yeah.
What a remarkable woman. Like, I've listened to that episode twice now, and I don't count the time when I edited, so twice after editing,
right.
And I am just in awe by her still.
Yeah,
like, I can't shake her. Like Brokeback Mountain, Andrea, I can't quit you.
I mean, it was just, yes, there was like a... like a transference of energy.
Oh yeah,
when we did that show, and I get it every time I listen to it.
If she wanted to, she could be an amazing cult leader. That's all I'm saying. Andrea, I will join your brigade. I'm just saying. but anyways, let's get moving on. And let's, before we get into spooky news, let's talk about the psychic word of the week. Okay, so this comes from our encyclopedic psychic dictionary book, and I flipped through, and I landed on the letter F, and the word that stuck out to me was the phrase flux days. In parentheses next to it is biorhythm charts, and what this says is trying, disturbing, and uneasy days that occur for unknown reasons when the body system changes from the discharging phase into the recuperative phase of a biorhythm cycle. This change takes one day, occurs exactly at the halfway point of the 23, 28, and 33-day cycles indicated on the biorhythm chart when the curve crosses the zero line. On these days, one should be cautious of their activities. So now I really want to look into a biorhythm chart.
Yeah, really.
To see what that's all about. It also says that there's a synonym, which is critical day or emotional cycle.
So I wonder, I'm not a woman, but I have heard that cycles can be, for menstrual cycles, they can be vary by the length. So some women can have a shorter cycle and some women can have, so it almost sounds like what you read there. Maybe aligns with, like, a woman's cycle.
Possibly. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I'd really like to take a deep dive into biorhythmic cycles and see what that's all about. Yep. So, yeah, we'll have to definitely check that out. So there's a little interesting tidbit of knowledge that seems to be a spinoff of something else, a bigger show. So we'll check that out. But let's go ahead and get into spooky news. So this week on Spooky News, this comes from thenextweb.com. The article that I found says scientists discover strong evidence of life on Mars.
Hmm.
So what this says is that it says we've been expecting aliens from Mars for decades now. But what if life was vanquished on the red planet before evolution ever got the chance to take hold? Which is something I've thought many times, and I think a lot of people do. A pair of researchers recently published an analysis of 3.5 billion-year-old soil samples from Mars containing chemical compounds called thiophenes that could potentially be organic. If they are, it would be highly likely that bacteria once lived on the planet. Terrestrial thiophenes are considered telltale signs of life by earthbound biologists. The presence of these possibly organic compounds in Martian soil represents the strongest evidence yet that life may have once existed anywhere other than Earth. And before we get ahead of ourselves, it's worth mentioning that even the duo who conducted the research are skeptical. A leading theory for the existence of Martian thiophenes is actually meteor impacts on the planet's surface, which would make them abiotic, meaning non-organic. Mm. Per a press release from the study, Washington State University, it said, meteor impacts provide one possible abiotic explanation. Thiophenes can also be created through thermochemical sulfate reduction, a process that involves a set of compounds being heated to 248 degrees Fahrenheit or more, or 120 degrees Celsius for our Canadian friends. However, as the press release continues, a slightly less likely but still possible scenario exists where ancient bacteria produce the thiophenes. It says, in the biological scenario, bacteria, which may have existed more than 3 billion years ago when Mars was warmer and wetter, could have facilitated a sulfate reduction process that results in thiophenes. There are also other pathways where thiophenes themselves are broken down by bacteria. Unfortunately, the Mars rover is not an astrobiologist, and it may take human boots on Martian soil to ultimately determine the origin of the thiophenes. In the meantime, the team does, and perhaps get more specific test data from the rover itself. Now, the researchers aren't declaring the search for alien life complete just yet. While the presence of thiophenes in Martian soil is exciting, it's not the definitive confirmation scientists are looking for, and it may be a while before we can say for sure whether life, bacterial or otherwise, even existed on Mars. So let's say it does turn out that the thiophenes are organic. Then what? 3 million years ago, there were at least 4 different hominid species roaming Earth. If Mars had living bacteria at the time, it would stand to reason that evolution would have led to more complex life forms, unless something happened to prevent the next stage of biological development from occurring. For more information on this, check out the team's research paper in the Journal of Astrobiology.
Hmm. So, you know, one of the theories I think out there is that there's two things that Martian life may have spawned human life on Earth.
Right, of course.
So either A, they were facing some catastrophe and they left Mars and settled on Earth, and then we are the ancestors of those Martians and we've forgotten that we have the ability over millennia that we can travel the stars and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Then the other thing is that when an asteroid hits, a really big asteroid, like the one that wiped out the dinosaurs, it blows a lot of rock from, like the one that blew a lot of rock from Earth into space.
Right.
Some of that rock may have fell on Mars. So the same thing would hold true. If a large asteroid were to hit Mars and blew a big chunk of Mars out and that had bacteria on it and it fell to Earth, it may have spawned life on Earth.
Right. I mean, just much like there's theory that the moon was originally a piece of Earth, right?
Yep.
So,
well, actually, the moon was originally, the theory is the moon was originally another planetoid, it collided with Earth and then spun off and became the moon.
Interesting. Yep. Interesting. Have you heard about the new tiny little moon?
Yeah.
That's revolving around the Earth right now. It's not very big, but...
It's actually an asteroid.
Yeah.
Well, that's what they think.
Yeah.
They think it's an asteroid that got caught in the Earth's gravity. And it actually happened back, I was reading an article today, it happened back in 2006, too.
Oh, really? It's kind of cool. I like little things like that. You know, I'm like, boy, watch out, space station. That's all I'm staged. That sucker hits you, man. Yeah. Booyah.
Well, micrometeorites would wipe out the space station, so.
But, yeah, you said you've got a spooky news story as well, right?
I do. So this comes from livescience.com.
As opposed to deadscience.com.
Well, I don't.
Now I'm going to look and see if there's a deadscience.com. I'm going to go ahead and hit GoDaddy up.
So something strange is going on with the North Star. It keeps breaking astronomers' models of how stars are supposed to act. People have watched the North Star for centuries. The bright star, also known as Polaris, is almost directly above Earth's North Pole. And serves as a landmark in the sky for travelers without a compass.
Especially those on the Underground Railroad.
Mm-hmm. Is that
like
true?
Like Harriet Tubman and them. Yeah, they were told to follow the North Star as a way to get to the North, as a way to escape the South and the tyranny of the South.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So it says that it's also Earth's closest Cepheid, a type of star that pulses regularly in diameter and brightness. And Polaris is a part of a binary system, so that means it has two stars known as Polaris A and Polaris B. And what it goes on to say is, however, as we learn more, it is becoming clear that we understand less about Polaris, wrote the authors of the new paper on the famous star. The problem with the Polaris is that no one can agree on how big or distant it is. Astrophysicists have a few ways of calculating the mass, age, and distance of a star, like Polaris. One method is a stellar evolution model, said New Study co-author Hilding R. Nielsen, an astrophysicist at the University of Toronto. Researchers can study the brightness, color, and rate of pulsation of the star and use that data to figure out how big and bright it is and in what stage of life it's in. Once those details are worked out, Nielsen told the Live Science, it's not hard to figure out how far away the star is. It's fairly simple math once you know how bright the star really is and how dim it looks from Earth. These models are especially precise for Cepheids because their rate of pulsing is directly related to their luminosity or brightness. That makes it easy to calculate the distance to any of the stars. Astronomers are so sure that they understand the relationship that Cepheids have become critical tools for measuring distances across the universe. But there are other ways to study Polaris, and those methods don't agree with the stellar evolution models. Polaris is what we call an astronomic binary, Nielsen said, which means you can actually see its companion going around it, sort of like a circle being drawn around Polaris. And that takes about 26 years. Researchers haven't yet made detailed observations of a full circuit by Polaris B, but they've seen enough of the companion star in recent years to have a pretty detailed picture of what the orbit looks like. With that information, you can apply Newton's law of gravity to measure the masses of the two stars, Nielsen said. That information, combined with the new Hubble Space Telescope Parallax, which I love the name.
Yeah, well, that's a DC Comics bad guy right there.
Measurements, another way to calculate the distance to a star, lead to very precise numbers on Polaris's mass and distance. Those measurements say it's about 3.45 times the mass of the Sun, give or take 0.75 solar masses. That's way less than the mass you get from stellar evolution models, which suggests a value of about 7 times the mass of the Sun. This star system is weird in other ways. Calculations of the age of Polaris B suggest that the star is much older than its bigger sibling, which is unusual for a binary system. Typically, the two stars are about the same age. Nielsen, together with Haley Blinn, an undergraduate student and researcher at the University of Toronto, generated a huge set of models of Polaris to see whether those models could reconcile all the data about the system that they couldn't. Yeah, this is a really long article. I'm going to say jump out and read it at lifescience.com. Basically, nobody can agree. The synopsis of the article is that no one can agree how big or how old or how far away the stars are.
Right.
Because they really don't stick. Usually what happens when you do a measurement of something, right, you apply one model and then you apply a secondary model which corroborates what's in the first model. Mm-hmm. In this case, it contradicts. So it's just an interesting read about the North Star, that one of the most known stars on the planet.
Yeah, if not the most. Yeah. And by the way, I did look up deadscience.com. It is available. I looked up how much it would be. It's $500. It's not cheap. But I found this really weird because I put in deadscience.com, and you know how it's always like related links, yeah, like it always does on that
right
stupid site. Well, it says, like, here's a couple of the links, okay? It says science projects for kids, jobs for teachers, photos, pictures, inventions, science news for kids, police jobs for kids, Green River Killer. I'm not kidding. Like,
that's how is that related?
I have no idea, but I'm a little perturbed because it's like all these like cute things about science and jobs and teachers and things like that. And then it's like Green River Killer.
Yeah. Well, jobs for kids is a little out there.
So I guess we're going to have to research the Green River Killer and do our second true crime episode ever.
I'm sure there's a true crime podcast out there that's covered it.
Oh, I guarantee it.
So, all right, so that's it for spooky news for me.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and move into our UFO sighting of the week. All right, so what do we got for our UFO sighting of the week, so Joshua?
This is another relatively recent sighting. It happened January 11th of this year. It comes from Alden Williams, Iowa. And it says,
I was driving home from downtown and looked off to the southwest and seen an extremely bright light, kind of looked oval in shape. But it appeared also to have red and green lights that were moving, as was the light it looked like. It was hovering, moving in a side-to-side motion, and at times would move quick towards me and then back. I followed it from my house to south of Alden, behind on gravel, taking a video approximately 6 miles. I got to the highway about a mile south of Old Highway 20, and filmed more. I decided to come home and watch it in the driveway for another 15 minutes, slowly to the west, and then suddenly it disappeared.
So this is another one, like the one that I read the, you know, last week, I think it was from 220 or 224, it swayed back and forth. And this is another one where, it, you know, they mentioned that it swayed back and forth. So I don't know, it's like swaying back and forth seems to be the...
Whip my hair back and forth. I don't know. It's dancing, maybe? Or we don't understand how it moves.
Yeah.
We think everything very linear because right, that's how our machines move.
Right.
You know, but who knows?
Somebody is going to hear this, though, and say red and green. They're going to hear red and green lights and assume airplane.
Well, yeah.
But a lot of... if you actually... So you go back to, like, the Mothman prophecies... The Eighth Tower by Keel, and now I'm working my way through the Operation Trojan Horse. And a lot of those UFO sightings from even back in, like, the 40s and the 50s, when airplanes weren't as, like, common, had red and green lights. So, again, it's one of those things where I question why we chose to put red and green lights on aircraft.
Right. Yeah, why? I mean, it's a random color.
Right.
It's Christmas time.
But, I mean, you know, did we do it because to try to, you know, convince people that it's just an airplane?
Well, I mean, that's what we were talking about last episode, right, is these new machines that are coming out from China and even from the United States happen to look very similar to things that have been witnessed over the last 50 years.
Exactly. So.
I don't know. Real quick, I did look up the Green River Killer just for shiggles.
Yeah.
And he's a creepy dude. He's okay. confessed to killed over 71 people. 48 of those people, the remains were found. So wow. he's at least killed 48 for sure. And in fact, there is a documentary that was out based on the true story of Ted Bundy helping officials help them find him.
Wow.
So they contacted another known serial killer.
Right.
To help them find a serial killer. Though Ted Bundy still claimed to have not killed anyone.
Right.
But he helped people.
So is this hopefully not Green River, Kentucky?
No, it's Washington.
Okay.
I did look it up. His name was Gary Ridgway. And yeah, I'm going to be doing some research into that because obviously it's been put into my path for some weird reason.
Yep.
So I'll be looking into that. Anyways, yeah, I don't want to talk about that anymore. And so that was super creepy. So let's move into Creepy Catch Up.
Creepy Catch Up. Creepy Catch Up. Creepy Catch Up. Creepy Catch Up. Y'all, it's creepy.
Okay, so I've had a few creepy things happen this week.
Okay.
Ghosty type things, not sleepy time, hag related, yeah. or anything like that. Sorry, I have to recount because I'm still thinking about that Gary Ridgway dude. At work today, specifically, our door, like to the outside, I mean, it's your standard latched shut door.
Yeah.
Opened like 5 times today. It does not do that. It's was never it, done that.
I was outside a little bit today, but I didn't, like, it wasn't very windy.
Mm-mm. No,
so.
And I got up and latched it shut every time and shook it to make sure.
Yeah,
there was nobody out there. We have a cam. There was nobody out there. It just kept opening. It happened like 5 times today.
Wow.
And the interesting thing is that it didn't happen until I started talking to my coworker Dale over Messenger. Over he works the night shift there and he works by himself. Well. Not anymore. We have a new guy that's working now with him. But for a long time, he's been the only person there from like 5 until 9. So a good 4 hours at night. And I was like, hey, Dale, you got any spooky stories of being in here? And then he just onslaughted me with them. Like, I have a ton. I'm not going to use one today because I already have one for today. But I will be reading his over the next couple weeks. They're pretty good. And they're not all at the at work. But anyways, as soon as we started talking, that's when that stuff started happening. Hmm. So it was like making reference, like, it's like, oh, you acknowledge that I'm here because
right.
I was sharing my stories, people that have heard on the show before, things that have happened to me there, like the marker sliding
right.
across the desk, being tapped on the shoulder and things of that
toilet
nature.
Paper falling off the
toilet paper falling off the dresser. Yeah,
yeah.
Things like that. So that was really weird. And interesting. The other thing is that my boss, my direct boss, so we're in this old, I don't really know what the building, it's been used for a lot of things, but it's like a 100-year-old building. And upstairs there's like a half basketball court. I mean,
yeah.
it's been a bunch of things. It's been a library. It's been like a school. It's been like a gym and different things like that. Well, anyways, there's a stage. And where the front door is, there's a stage there, and that's where my boss sits. So he overlooks all of us, right? And on that stage, anyway, so it's up. I mean, it's probably a good, I'd say 4.5-5 feet up. There's stairs that go up there, yada,
okay.
yada. My boss has been out all this week and last week because he's been getting his bathroom remodeled, and he needs to be there. Dude, I can't tell you how many times I've heard his chair spin or his, like, keyboard click or things like that. And I would think he was here, and it would make me – because during the last 2 weeks, he's come in probably 2 or 3 times just to pick up something
yep.
or something along the line. So I turn around ready to speak to him. Nobody's there.
Nobody's there.
Nobody's there. And I would just get this chill up my spine, you know, like – because, I mean, I heard a chair, like the chair roll. I heard the clicking. He has a really particular way of clicking because he had a hand injury a couple
yep.
years ago, so he can only type with one hand. And so he has a very particular way that he types. And I could hear that cadence.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just super weird. And just super weird. And I would feel it whether or not I had headphones on or not. So very, very, very spooky week. I feel like there's something else, but I can't think of what it is. So I'm going to let you go. From this point, unless you wanted to comment on that.
No, it just there seems to be a lot of activity in that building.
Oh, for sure. I don't even go upstairs. Like, I just can't.
We,
like, there's
should,
just something about it.
We should see if they'd let us come.
They would. I've half talked to them about
okay.
it. They would be totally down.
So, yeah, my creepy catch-up has been, again, in the form of dreams. It's so odd. I just, I typically remember a lot of my dreams, but a lot of my dreams lately, like, I don't remember anything other than the creepy dreams. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, so it's like, that's all I'm dreaming about is just, and I wouldn't say creepy is necessarily, this is creepy catch-up, but it's just more, I'll say, informative. So the last like three nights I've had some dreams. So the first one was I think I told you before, I had, and this has been several weeks ago, I had a dream where Ingrid Cold came to me and he said, you know, I asked him, I said, if you're what, you know, aliens look like, then how do you explain the grays?
Mm-hmm.
And his response was, the grays are androids.
Huh. Interesting.
So that was a few weeks ago. Earlier this week, I had another dream. Didn't involve Ingrid, but we were talking about the Greys. And in my dream, I said, Ingrid said they're androids. And whoever the entity that I was talking with, I couldn't really see the entity I was talking with, but they said, yes, we had to build them so they could help us.
Interesting. You should hang on to that thought too, because I know soon we'll be discussing Ingrid Cold with Santosh.
Yep.
That'll be an interesting kind of precursor, so to speak. See what he thinks about that.
So then the second dream in the sequence, if you would call it that, that I had the other night was I was laying in bed and I'd like drifted to sleep, and just before I was startled awake. I was having a dream that I was in my foyer, and there was a bright light outside. It was dark outside, but there was a really bright light outside of the door. Just like a pure white light. And it was radiating, like, around the door and underneath the door and everything. And I opened the door, and when I did, there was just this white light everywhere, and there was these two.
It was the Lord.
No, I don't think so. But there were these two beings that were standing like in the light. One was it looked like a big, I don't know, like a big lobster or something.
Did they have like a little magazine and they were like, "We want to talk to you about our Lord and Savior"?
No, no, but like one was like a big like lobster looking thing, except it had four really big, like, deep blue eyes.
It's interesting because I've been watching Lock and Key on Netflix, which I highly recommend. The comic book was amazing. The show does really well, too. But in it, they've got some friends that they call themselves the Savinis because they love Tom Savini and old horror makeup effects and stuff. And so they make their own movie based off of a local legend in Massachusetts, and it's this giant lobster creature. So when you're saying that, I'm seeing the kid in the suit.
Like, I mean, and when I say lobster, I mean, I just mean to say that it could have been an insect type body as well, because it just, I mean, it has an exoskeleton.
Yeah, I mean, lobsters are just the insects of the sea.
Yeah. So I mean, it had an exoskeleton is the point that I'm trying to get to, and then so it was walking on four legs, and then it was using hands to talk or whatever. Hmm. But the thing, they didn't talk. Used all communication, I guess, telepathy or whatever, but had very, like, sharp teeth, had four blue eyes. I mean, I'm talking, like, there were no whites in the eye. It was just the whole eye was blue. And then the other entity or being was red as well, and it was a winged creature. It had, like, some sort of, like, bat wings or something. And it was really weird. It had, supports that came off of its head that went up and held its eyes.
Interesting.
And its eyes were, and that's where I was talking to you
guys.
It was
like a Nickelodeon character that had that, wasn't there? Like, that had hands and then it held the eyes up?
No, not hands.
Oh, supports. So just supports. Okay.
So think about, like, Andorian.
Yeah.
But at the top you had It was holding eye.
Okay.
So, gotcha. And then, but the eyes were like diamond, and they were solid dark red, like crimson red. No whites again. Just, you know. So anyways, they were talking to me, again, telepathically, and they said, I said, who are you? And they said, we are your friends. And I said, well, I've never seen you before. And they said, you have, but most are frightened by us, so we show you something else.
Interesting. So, yeah, this is a theory of yours as well.
Right.
So that idea that these aliens that are out there, the reason they look humanoid is to project that image to us as a way to make us less frightened. And, you know, I had mentioned to you in a theory that about the blondes.
Right.
That those that looked much like the Vikings did have been around longer.
Right.
And so they have learned better how to look like us. Or, in fact, that was the majority of who they spent time with. And that's where the Vikings and the Norwegians got their gods from. Much like Indrid and them were red-faced, so to speak. You know, would that be more Native American or South American
or even
like that? Or even Mongolian,
you know, or even Indian?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's so that was so then. And like I said, what was weird about that is I was startled awake. I mean, I Kristen was still awake as my wife. She was still awake and she was playing on her phone or something, and her light was on, and so I just went back to sleep. But so then the last one is last night. I was laying in bed. I went to sleep. I didn't feel like I was going to dream because it had been a really long day and I was tired. And oftentimes when I'm really tired, I don't really dream that much.
Oh, that's when I dream the most.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm not. I toss and turn all night.
Yeah.
So if I sleep through the night, I have the most epic dreams.
So I got the sense as I was falling asleep that there was something in the room. And excuse me, I woke up and I looked straight ahead and I was looking at the curtains, and out of the corner of my eye I saw a black figure standing there.
Now this was your dream, right?
No, this is I'm awake. So out of the corner of my eye I see this kind of black figure standing off to this, like, towards the side of the bed or the end of the bed. So in my mind I think to myself, or I think to it, if you will, you're not welcome here unless you're here for good intentions.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be with the cleansing that I did.
Right. So when I opened my eyes again, I didn't see the black figure in the corner of my vision anymore. So I went try to go back to sleep. A few minutes later, I woke up, or I don't really know how much longer it had been, but I woke back up, and I looked again towards the direction of Kristen's laying there sleeping. I looked towards the direction of her against the curtain, and it was like it was like swirling. It was just swirling. I mean, it's dark in our bedroom. We keep it really dark, mm-hmm. but there's a nightlight in the hallway in case the girls have to get up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. So that casts a little bit of light into the room, and it was enough that I could see, like, it was just kind of swirling. And so in my mind, I looked at that swirl and I said, "I see you. I know you're here." And I saw the swirl move. Mm-mm. And shift.
Mm.
So then I said again, "I see you and I know you're here. Only good intentions." And I saw it move again. I closed my eyes and I focused at my core to send out a radiant white light to protect the house. When I opened my eyes again, the swirl was still there, and then it disappeared.
You know, it's interesting that you said swirl, because I just watched a movie. I love watching horror movies, and I've been down this, like, satanic hole lately of, like, old 70s movies that deal with satanic cults and things like that.
Yep.
And satanic music. It's been really funny. But anyways, I was like, all right, I need a break from Christopher Lee for, like, 5 minutes. And I was looking up another movie. And I was like, oh, let's look up, see if there's any movies on Phoenix Lights. And there's this fictional film called Phoenix Forgotten. And I highly recommend it to everybody. It's a found footage film that takes place, and it's about, and apparently there's a crap ton of similar themed movies out there of, like, four teenagers disappearing during the Phoenix Lights.
Huh.
I don't know which one was first, but this one was actually in the theaters, and I remember seeing the placard for it because I thought it was about River Phoenix at first. Honest, I really did. I thought it was like a documentary about River Phoenix. But anyways, it was really good. But they're going around. They're trying to find evidence after seeing the lights, and they see all these petroglyphs, which are like a graffiti left over by Native Americans, and they see all these swirls. And they are talking about that was the way that the Native Americans described the flying saucers were these spirals, these swirls. And, you know, and then they also talk about Ezekiel's chariot, you know, the round thing like that. And that was essentially what the UFOs looked like and stuff like that. But it was really, really interesting. And so as soon as you said swirl, that's what it made me think of. I know it's probably not, but
it was. Yeah, it wasn't spiral. It was more like if you think about like water was like that's kind of soapy, and how it just kind of like swirls around in the water. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It I could just tell that it wasn't like there was something else there.
Yeah.
You know,
it just gave me an excuse to talk about that movie because I really liked it, and I think everybody should watch it. It's on Prime or Netflix. I don't remember which one, but
so that's my. That's my creepy kitchen.
I do have one more. I didn't remember the other thing, but I did want to say this. So we have been talking to – well, I have. I've been talking to an upcoming guest named Vashti Hooper. She's a psychic medium here in town. She has huge following. She's absolutely phenomenal, and a lot of her predictions have come true. But one of the things that has happened is that I've dreamed about her. I've actually dreamed about her twice, but last night's was significant. Last night I had this dream that her and I were sitting on a couch, a patio couch, like outdoors. It was, you know, summer. It was nice. And we were just sitting there and we were speaking to one another. Excuse me. We were speaking to one another, but with no words. So not necessarily telepathically. It wasn't like she was saying words to me and I was saying words back. That was definitely happening. Yeah. But there were also things like emotions and colors and pictures. And we were able to communicate in this remarkable way. And we were speaking of very, very deep things. And then we would laugh about very simple things. And I just thought that was so interesting, thinking about who she is and, and things like that. And that I have not even met her yet. And I've dreamt about her twice now. And so, but we're going to have her on hopefully, you know, sometime at the end of April or May or something like that. But yeah, I just thought that was really, really interesting. Like, I'm very interested to meet her because she's already imprinted on my mind.
Right. Yeah.
So, but yeah, that is essentially all of the creepy ketchup, I believe, that I have.
The bottle's empty.
The bottle is indeed empty. Before we wrap up creepy ketchup, because this is, in a sense, creepy ketchup, is on the Buttercup Brigade, the fan group of Andrea Perrin, somebody dropped a really interesting thing. Now, some other things have been coming out saying, you know, oh, the coronavirus was predicted by Dean Koontz or different things like that. But someone posted on there today a screenshot of the actual book. One of Sylvia Brown's, who's a renowned psychic, she's no longer with us. She was on Montel Williams all the time. My sister loved her. But she wrote a lot of books, and she wrote a book called, I think, End of Times.
End of Days.
End of Days. And in this book, she predicted what seems to me to be the coronavirus, and I just wanted to share that just to add this to Creepy Ketchup.
Yep.
So, Josh, go ahead and read that.
So, again, this is from 2008.
Oh, I didn't even mention that. So, 2008,
The book End of Days.
Sylvia Brown.
In around 2020... a severe pneumonia-like illness will spread throughout the globe, attacking the lungs and the bronchial tubes, and resisting all known treatments. Almost more baffling than the illness itself will be the fact that it will suddenly vanish as quickly as it arrived, attack again 10 years later, and then disappear completely.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that...
Right.
Besides the other part, we haven't seen it leave yet, but I mean, it ain't been around long.
No.
At this point, and you know, obviously it's not 2030, so we can't see the future from there.
Right.
But I mean, that's oddly specific.
Well, what's really interesting is there's a prediction above this one.
Right.
It says that in 2010 there'll be a flesh-eating disease like they had several years ago that will kind of spike up. And so I went back and looked, And in 2010, there was a strand of strep.
Yeah.
That did cause a flesh-eating
I remember that.
Disease for about, I think it was like 2 or 3% of the people who contracted that strain of strep, but still. So, yeah.
I'm just fascinated by that. This is not a gift that I have. You know, I'm not Nostradamus in any way, or my sister, or Vashti, or even Sylvia Brown. So I'm very fascinated, and I love to see when psychics, in terms of that type of psychic, the ones that can see the future, when those things come true. Because that seeing the future can be so muddled because the future is not written, you know? And so I just, that's so oddly specific that it attacks the lungs, which is what COVID-19 does, creates respiratory issues. And it's just in 2020, I mean, and it's moving fast and it's worldwide. I mean, it's affecting everyone worldwide.
So it's, what's really interesting too on that is if you happen to Google it, there's already a Snopes article that says that it's false. And I wonder if the person who wrote the Snopes article is just trying to calm people, or if it's like they truly believe that there is no truth to the prediction.
Yeah, I mean, how can you? I mean, when you're looking at something that will never be considered fact.
Right.
I mean, how can you?
And this gets into something else that we've talked about, you know, lately, is the willingness for people to accept a book that was written 2,000 years ago, but not the words of a psychic.
Right. Yes. God, yes. Pun intended. All right. Well, we need to get moving on because we're 40 minutes in. So we need to get to our topic for the evening, which is the Hellfire Club, a dark history and mysterious hauntings at the Hellfire Club. So let's move right into that. All right, Josh. Tell me about the Hellfire Club. I know we're not talking about the Marvel Comics supergroup.
And I honestly have no idea what you're talking about. So,
and you've lost your nerd card yet again.
I'm not a big reader of comics.
They don't have audio comics, okay?
It's just hard for me to read stuff and stay engaged. Anyways. Maybe if I had you doing all the voices for
me. I would do it. When I used to do daycare stuff and summer camps, I would read them a book over the summer, and I would do all the voices for everything, and the other teachers and stuff were always like, how do you remember the voices every year? And I'm like, or not every year, but every week, you know, the same voices. And I'm like, don't know, because I make them up on the spot, you know?
I do the voices for my kids, but apparently I can't do the voices for myself. So, anyways... perched atop an expanse in Mount Pilar Hill near Dublin, Ireland.
Ireland
is an old abandoned stone structure. It is a crumbling ruins from a bygone era, commonly called the Hellfire Club. The building was erected in 1725 by Irish Speaker of the House, Commons William Connolly.
William Connolly, how are ye?
I'm doing well, I guess.
No, you're not William Connolly.
Okay, I thought we were.
I just figured his spirit was
role playing.
Oh, do you want to role play?
I get to be the leprechaun.
Ooh, I want to be Andrea Perrin.
And was originally a hunting lodge, then called Mount Pilar, as well as other monikers such as the Brass Castle and Bevan's Hill.
Man, Brass Castle, that's a cool name. I'd like to name a bar that. Be like,
well, it could be a good band name.
Oh, yeah. Same thing. Keith, if you're listening, you should rename your band to the Brass Castle.
Brass Castle.
Yep. Or the Brassle.
Yep. It is also well known as being one of the creepiest and most aggressively haunted places in Ireland.
Man, now I want to actually go there.
Well, I'd just like to go to Ireland.
Well, that too, but get onto our Patreon.
Yeah.
And become a $100,000 subscriber.
Right.
So that we can go to the Hellfire Club and Guinness.
Right. And Guinness or drink
Guinness? And Guinness. Okay. I want to go to Guinness as well.
Okay, yeah, that would be cool. Good old harp. So with it says, you know, things begin to get spooky from the years between 1735 and 1741. When the building was frequently used as a meeting place for the notorious Irish Hellfire Club, a sort of secret society, who allegedly used it as a venue for all manner of occult rituals, black masses, ceremonies, black magic rituals, sacrifices, both animal and human, and it was generally full of orgies and wild, drunken debauchery.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because around this time is really when the secret clubs were really becoming a huge thing. Yeah. Like, I'm sure they were around, but they were, I don't know, it seems more public right. At the time. You know, you're looking at the Masons were really becoming big around yep. That time. I mean, you know, around that time, they were looking to start America. I mean, right. You know, the Masons, the Skulls, and just, you know, different things like that were happening around that time. So secret societies were posh at the time.
So maybe, what is a black mass?
Black mass is a satanic mass.
Okay. So it's just like a Catholic mass, but to
reverse
being the devil.
Essentially. If you look into Anton LaVey's Black Mass, yes, it is the antithesis. You know, things like that, but it's just a blanket term that okay. Essentially is a non-Christian mass.
It's a ritual
yes. For
the purposes of worshiping Satan.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, well, not even necessarily Satan, but dark things.
Okay.
You know, because Crowley was not a Satan worshiper by any means,
okay. But
he performed Black Masses.
Gotcha. Okay. So their motto, which was... Gonna try this, face sicur to von dress.
Not even close.
Okay.
I don't know what it is though, because it's obviously in Gaelic.
or do what thou wilt.
Right, which is a very Crowley term. And in Wicca we have harm none, do as thou wilt. So, you know, there's a little difference there.
Yeah.
But Crowley and those guys and Golden Dawn and all them, they were basically do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah. So. Adding to the occult imagery of the club in general is that they were said to always leave a chair open for the devil and that their mascot was an enormous black cat.
How funny. I told you that I've been taking a deep dive into satanic occult yeah. Movies and music and things like that. And I even asked our friend the theologian his views on Satanism. I had no idea that this was going to be brought up because we almost had him as a guest
yep. Today. Yep.
But he had to back out because Corona.
Right. He couldn't call in.
Yeah.
He didn't want to catch it over the phone.
No, but, you know, he had some other things going yep. On. But I find that very interesting that there's the devil. And it's this is going to sound crazy, but the devil's been on my mind a lot lately. And I don't even believe in the devil.
Lived. That's devil backwards.
Oh, yeah. Now you're blowing my mind today.
Okay.
So the devil lived is a palindrome. No, it's not. Never mind. Go ahead.
I saw something the other day, though, that said that Neil Armstrong and then...
I saw this.
Neil A. backwards
is alien. Yeah. Did we watch the same thing?
I don't know.
I think we did.
I think we must have. I don't remember where it was.
We're on group mine.
Yeah. So, anyways, I don't understand the...
Buzz Aldrin? Buzz backward is Zub.
Yes, but you didn't have to use the last name.
Oh, sorry.
So be Azub.
Azub.
Which is close to Beelzebub.
Oh, my God. Beelzebub was an alien. What about Michael? What's his name? What's the third guy's name? Michael... It's not Michael Scott.
No. It's not Michael Collins.
Michael. No. Oh, what is the third guy's name? Sorry you didn't walk on the moon, dude.
What? No. No. What is his name?
I'm telling you, it's Michael Scott.
It's not. The third person to walk.
It is Michael Collins.
Is it?
It is Michael Collins.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
I just pulled that out of nowhere.
You sure did, man. You sure did.
I don't know what's in there. I'm just...
I was thinking of Tom Collins, so I was like, you're wrong. But no, you were right. It's Michael Collins.
So Mike C. would be C. Ickham.
Well, my middle name is Michael, so I always say Lickham. So Clickham.
All right, moving on. I did want to ask you, though, what are your thoughts on why... The black cat is always associated with. Is it just because black and
yeah, probably
darkness?
Just black, and it got associated with witches, and
he can sneak up on you in the dark.
I guess I don't know.
Okay.
I've never really looked into it before.
Yeah, there are also many stories of the supernatural around this place when it was in use. The most popular being that one evening, A stranger dressed all in black visited the Hellfire Club out of the rainy night. The members allowed him in and even to join them in a game of cards. At one point, a player purportedly dropped a card under the table, and when he went to retrieve it, he noticed that the stranger had cloven hooves.
I knew it!
Instead of feet.
Man, where's Daniel Webster when you need him?
At that moment, it became clear that this was the devil
It was the devil himself.
It was the devil. Foosball is the devil.
And he stood up to go shooting up into the air where he vanished in a ball of fire.
I'm not going to lie. That's super cool.
Yeah.
Like, that's the downside to not believing in Satan, is that you think all the shit that he did is really, really cool. And all of a sudden the imagery from like Slayer and Halloween and stuff like that is like really cool.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to derail us too much, but just because the devil may not have been the devil that is described in so many religions doesn't mean that the stuff that he did is not necessarily cool or whatever.
Sure. I see what you're doing there.
I mean, it could just be a cryptid.
Yes. I mean, it's closer. I mean, I told you that the Christians stole the idea of Satan from the horned god. As well as other interpretations like Pan and things like that, you know, and they took these essentially good gods and changed them as a way to force these pagan heathens to disworship or start to worship certain things.
So what I'm hearing is that the Catholic Church was the Borg. Resistance is futile.
It's futile, yes. Satan is a poo-poo head. You are the devil and the devil is bad.
All right. Moving on. In another tale, the Hellfire members were in the process of sacrificing a black cat.
Which isn't very nice.
No. And if you have a black cat as your mascot, why would you kill a black cat?
I don't know. But it makes me want to make you my mascot.
Because you want to kill me?
Yeah. You figured me out. No.
I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
No.
So, and when a priest performed an exorcism on its corpse, a demon was said to spew forth from the carcass, in some versions of the tale, setting the place on fire as it did.
How funny that they brought in a priest. You know, this is one thing that's really, really interesting. So some of the some of the old satanic stuff that I've been reading, excuse me, there is this massive connection to Catholicism, like not even just in like flipping rituals, but like a lot of them were Catholics too, which is really interesting.
Mass on Sunday, Black Mass on
Saturday, I guess. Yeah, very, very interesting. And that there was this correlation that the two existed almost together, as if, which really gets into some pagan ideas that the god is two-faced, is half good, half evil. And that the devil, in which had become over the years, represented that side of God.
That side of God. It's also very yin and yang.
Yeah, exactly, type. Exactly. That there's a balance in the force, essentially.
Yeah. So, in yet another tale, club member Simon Luttrell, Lord Inherm, and later Earl of Carhampton.
Mm-hmm, simple.
Yeah, Carhart, made a deal with the devil to give his soul in exchange for clearing his debts. And when the devil showed up at the Hellfire Club to collect, Luttrell ran away.
I'm sure he didn't get far. I mean, it's the devil.
It's the
devil. Why even run?
Right. Man?
I mean, it's like, are you like Robert Johnson, the blues player? Like, did the Hellhounds go after him? You know, that's what I want to know. What happened next?
Right.
What choose your own adventure story? Which page am I turning to, Josh? What's next? Am I going to 27 to see the Hellhounds get him? Or am I going to 56 to see the devil catch him and hold him in his arms? Or am I going to 92? Where I turn and he dies because he fell.
You know what's funny? When you just said the first page number, you said it was 27.
Mm-hmm.
Last night I sent you a number which was 27.
Awkward. That's cool, ain't gonna lie.
Anyways, in yet another story, a local farmhand once found his way to the club and was invited in for the night, only to be found the next day babbling nonsensically in a vegetative trance. Wasn't that the Frogman of
Ohio? Yeah, it was.
Living out the rest of his days in an insane asylum, never recovering enough to even be able to explain what he had seen, doomed to remain a drooling madman.
Neat.
You know, something there. I mean, he could have hit his head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He just had a concussion.
Yeah. I mean,
he was just playing some foosball.
In later years, the building would be moved further down the hill to a place called Killikey House. Literally K-I-L-L, kill a key house.
Interesting. So when we go there, we need to go find the original spot. Yeah. And I'm sure they tell you that in the tour.
Yeah. It's on the Haunts of Ireland tour.
Right.
So the club's nefarious activities continued, including allegedly kidnapping, murdering, and consuming a father's daughter. A farmer's daughter. On the
father's daughter. Well, yeah.
Yeah. A farmer's daughter on the orders of a notorious member named Thomas Buck Whaley.
Not to be confused with Buck Rogers.
Or Uncle Buck.
Or Buckwheat.
Yeah. Or Wheaties. consuming, though. Yeah.
Yeah, they ate her.
Yeah.
That happened.
In the wake of Whaley's death, the club sort of disbanded, and paranormal tales have orbited the location ever since.
I find it funny they called themselves the Hellfire Club, and they've lost like three clubs now due to fire. Like, maybe y'all should have called yourself the Hell Pizza Club.
Or maybe like the Water Club.
Yeah, no, because then they would have all drowned all the time.
So, let's see. One of the main ideas is that the building itself is cursed. So this is like getting back to the conversation around do buildings. You know, this has its roots in the fact that during the original construction of the hunting lodge, there were found to be ancient
cairns.
Okay, and an underground grave complex beneath. And according to the lore, many of the cairn stones were repurposed into the actual construction of the lodge, angering the spirits in the process to the point that it is said that the roof was mysteriously blown right off the building by a terrifying force right after it was finished. In addition to this, the Hellfire Club and the nearby Stewart's house.
So, by the way, a cairn is a man-made pile of stones. You can see they're all over Scotland and Ireland. Gotcha. A lot of them don't know what they were for because they're from prehistoric times.
Okay. So,
I ain't gonna lie, I had to look it up.
Okay. In addition, the Stewart's house have been intensely haunted by an eclectic mix of different spirits. One is the apparition of a huge black cat.
Of course.
The size of a large dog. Said it to be able to...
It's just a Maine Coon.
To speak and to have blazing red eyes, a humanoid face. Ugh, it's like the Sonic.
Oh, yeah.
Sonic pre-editing.
Yeah. Yes, not the restaurant.
Yeah. And to be wreathed in a smell of sulfur, which roams the building and its surrounding countryside.
That's creepy. I mean, I'm just thinking about a cat with a human face.
Yeah.
Ugh.
There is also the spirit of a wailing woman on fire.
Somebody put me out! Somebody put me out!
Said to be either one of the victims of the Hellfire centuries ago or a sacrifice, as well as an unidentified ghost that apparently will rip off any jewelry that visitors wear, especially crucifixes.
So either they hate crucifixes or they want really one. Like them.
Right.
There's vampires, y'all. I need this crucifix.
Most unusual of all is the presence of the ghost of a dwarf. Believed to have been sacrificed by the club. Interestingly, reports of the ghost dwarf have had a bit of infusion of believability when the remains of an actual dwarf were found buried under the floorboards of the Killikey house during renovations in 1971.
What? For real?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, that's crazy. See, that's the stuff I like, the pudding moments.
Yeah.
It's like there's always been this tale of this ghost dwarf, and then here's the damn thing under the boards.
Right.
Ugh!
Adding to the ghostly part of the apparitions of an Indian and two nuns known as Blessed Margaret and Holy Mary also thought to have been victims of human sacrifice during the club's active years. In addition to all these wandering spirits and entities are numerous complaints of people having nausea or chest pains when visiting the area. The whole place is reportedly absolutely infused with a sense of dread and despondency. Even paranormal investigators get squeamish at this place. The head of Paranormal Researchers Ireland has said of the Hellfire Club building,
"There have been two places I have been that have absolutely got me terrified, and I don't usually, the Hellfire Club of Dublin Mountains and Loftus Hall of Wexford. We were up the Hellfire one night, a group of 8 or 10 of us. We stood in a circle, and the next minute there was a thud. It was like a vibration went through the whole building, and all the equipment went mental. One of the guys was in the hall, and he was a cynic, and he said a black shadow crossed him, 100%, a tall black shadow. Another guy started getting sick, and then a girl said she heard a whisper in her ear, very clear, and it just said, 'Get out!' All in the course of 1 minute. Chaos. That was the first time ever I called an end to the night and said we didn't feel safe."
Yeah, so the head of the group, the Irish Ghost Hunters, a crack group that uses high-tech gadgetry, including thermal imaging cameras and state-of-the-art audio equipment to investigate haunted sites throughout the country. Kelly's team have been to the Hellfire Club on numerous occasions, but have been so completely assaulted by unexplained malevolent activity that they vowed never to step foot in there again. Kelly has said,
"We've been everywhere in the country at this stage, but the Hellfire Club is somewhere we have no intention of returning to because there's very sinister energy there. I know people go up there all the time, and no doubt it will be a popular destination at Halloween, but I will advise people to think twice about going there, because there's a very negative energy there. There's a really weird sensation as soon as you go in, and it's something I don't want to repeat again for the rest of my life. So it's the only building in Ireland that's off limits for me in terms of conducting a paranormal investigation."
So it is unfortunate that the history of the Hellfire Club is so shrouded with secrecy and pervaded with scary urban legends to the point that it is difficult to unravel where the truth begins and the fiction ends.
Interesting. So I wanted to share this a little bit. We didn't really talk about it a little bit, but Sir Francis Dashwood is very... popular for one of the starters of the Hellfire Club.
Okay.
Him and the Earl of Sandwich, who invented the sandwich.
Yeah.
They are alleged to have been members during the 1730s. And in fact, Dashwood founded the Order of the Knights of St. Francis in 1746.
Huh.
But anyways, he's one of the main people that they believe was one of the big... his clubs were what really pushed the Hellfire Clubs. But anyways, one of the things I found here was talking about Hellfire Clubs in contemporary life. And one of the things that they mention is the Phoenix Society. And so this says in 1781, Dashwood's nephew, Joseph Alderson, an undergraduate of Brasenose College, Oxford, founded the Phoenix Society, later known as the Phoenix Common Room. But it was only in 1786 that the small gathering of friends asserted themselves as a recognized institution. The Phoenix was established in honor of Sir Francis, who died in 1781, as a symbolic rising from the ashes of Dashwood's earlier institution. And to this day, the Dining Society abides by many of its predecessors' tenets. Its motto, Uno avulso non deficit alter, which means when one is torn away, another succeeds, is from the sixth book of Virgil's Aeneid and refers to the practice of establishing a continuity of the society through the process of constant renewal of its graduate and undergraduate members. The Phoenix Common Room's continuous history was reported in 1954 as a matter of note to the college and still exists to this day.
Wow.
Another one that it talks about is in Ireland, of course. This is a number of Hellfire clubs are still in existence in Ireland and are centered around universities and still meet secretly. For example, there is still a Hellfire club at Trinity College that meets in central Dublin, while there is also a Hellfire club at Maynooth University that meets in Maynooth, as well as one that regularly meets in Cork. These clubs carry out similar actions as the original Hellfire Club, including mock ceremonies and drinking alcohol.
Oh, no. Not alcohol.
Not alcohol. The devils.
Well, I mean, I remember going to, of course, I never saw the real Masonic ceremonies, but my grandfather is a Mason. My dad's a Mason.
And so I didn't know your dad was, but I guess that makes sense.
So I remember going to some of the more public available ceremonies, and they're just ceremonies, right? To kind of show the passing of one level of your journey to the next level of your journey. And, you know, for a little while I looked at...
I remember that. You and your friend Jay Kirk weren't talking about it.
Looked at doing, you know, becoming Masons as well. But really I think what a lot of those clubs, and I don't know this for the clubs in Ireland, but I could say this, I think, at least for the Masons, is they... I would say in the 1900s became more of a way for socialization.
Sure. But I will tell you this, okay? As a pagan, specifically a Gardnerian witch of Gerald Gardner's lineage, we have two different rituals, the one we show the public and the one that we do behind closed doors. Right. We are oath-bound. There are things I will never share with you because of that, because unless you are sworn in. And even when we have a thing called outer court and inner court. Outer court is for people to learn the ways of Wicca and the Gardnerian path without learning all the secrets.
Yeah.
And I feel that those things like... the Masons and things like that, they don't show us everything. And you know the crazy levels that the Masons even has that the people like your grandpa probably doesn't even know, because they are so secretive even at the top.
Right.
And like I said, I know, because when we do public rituals, it is very, very different.
Right.
So it is a very, you know, light version. But even then, I mean, there's a lot of things that when I got initiated into full circle when I came first degree, I was blown away by the things that I learned. I was really surprised. Some of it I had seen because of the Alexandrians, which is basically the same version as Gardnerians. He started his own thing, but it's almost exactly, he spun off of that. Right. So there's a lot. They're very public. And so a lot of similar things are out there. So there was some stuff I kind of knew already, but then there were other things that I haven't even gone all the way to the degrees, because my coven, my high priestess and high priest moved to Rhode Island and I didn't want to join another coven. So I have not ascended past first degree, you know, within the Gardnerian path. So there's stuff that I still don't know.
Yeah.
So very interesting.
It is all very interesting.
It is very, very interesting. The stories that we tell segue to listener story. So, yeah, that's the Hellfire Club. You know, very, very interesting. One of many secret societies that we'll touch on. You know, we've got the Illuminati. We've got the Masons that we can touch on. And
well, it's just really interesting that people are so attracted to those secret societies. Mm-hmm. I think this is probably... like three groups of people. There's those who think that if you're hiding it, it must be bad. Those that think that if you're hiding it, it must be cool. And those that think that I don't really care.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I think the thing is that it's because it's secret and you don't know who's all in it.
Yeah.
You know, and that, you know, there's this idea that A, you're going to find out paranormal occulty things that kind of shake reality.
Yeah.
Or you're going to find out that Tom Hanks is a Hellfire Club member, right?
Yeah.
You know, or something.
Don't
along
say
those
that
lines.
About Tom Hanks.
I mean, you know, you've heard the stories of the Bushes and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, George Bush and them. So, I mean, who knows?
That reminds me of a joke. Why don't they let this goes back to when George Bush was in the office. Why don't they let dogs in the White House?
Why?
Because they chase the quails and pee on the bushes.
Oh, yeah, the old ones, yeah. Potato. But, yeah, I want to get into the listener story, because we didn't have one last week because, my goodness, Andrea Perrin, I love you. I could listen to you talk for hours. But this one comes from a guy.
That's insightful.
It is insightful. I have to pull it up here. Tanner Hickson, sorry. He's someone I reached out to a while ago on the Haunted History of Kentucky. And he reached out to me with this story. And, you know, he's actually like, when y'all gonna read my story? So he's been listening, like he's really interested, and it was already on our list for last week. But it is this week, and I wanted to go, and it's actually a pretty cool story. So this story, this listener story, which you can send your listener stories to fearscapepodcast@gmail.com or hit us up on any of our social medias, Fearscape Pod. We'll read these on air, or send me your voice. We haven't had one of those in a while. So anyways, this comes from Tanner Hickson.
Story time. So me and my family have a farm in McCracken County. It's 97 acres and about 40 or so is woodlands. The land has the Clarks River on the left and the lake on the right. The farm used to have a house deep in the woods near the river where my deer stand is. So, bear with me, it was deer season of 2016, and I'm in my stand, and my stepdad is in his. He's probably a good 75 to 100 yards away from me. Him and I are on the side of the farm where the house used to be in the Clarks River. It was probably around 5:30 and it was still dark, but the sunlight was trying to come in. All of a sudden, I started to hear Native American flute music playing. So I quickly texted my stepdad and said, "Do you hear that?" He said, "Hear what?" I said, "Native American flutes, music playing. Do you not hear it?" He again said, "No." In this whole time, it got closer and closer, and it got louder, and then it stopped. Now, we finished our hunt and got out of our stands around 7. I told him what had happened and what I heard and witnessed, and he said to me that maybe one or two things happened. Either one, I was in a different dimension, theirs for a split second, or two, it was a quick repeat of history. They came to our time. Which both being powered or cause of happening being the water of the Clarks River. But I'll tell you what, one thing is, it was an experience I'll never forget.
Now, not sure if I think I have shared this story before, but thank you, Tanner. When I went camping with Santosh and our other friend out in the Daniel Boone National Forest, we heard this Native American drumming and what sounded like chanting and stuff.
You talked about that when we did our episode on Native American.
On the creatures, yeah. So I believe you, Tanner, 100%.
And for those who may not know, McCracken County is down around Paducah.
Is it? I didn't know that. Yep. I didn't know that. Okay, so funny story.
Other end of the state, but
funny. Yeah, it is the other end of the state from where mine happened. But funny story, when I first moved to Kentucky from Toledo, Ohio, when I first saw Paducah, because our old youth minister moved out to Paducah, Randy, I won't say his last name, but he moved out to Paducah, and I had never heard the word Paducah before, so when I was looking it up, I'd only seen you guys had written it down, so I thought it was pronounced Paducah. And I kept telling my dad, because my dad's like, "Oh, where are you guys going to go?" I said, "Oh, we're going to Paducah."
Paducah.
And he kept laughing at me. I didn't know why. And then when we were getting ready to leave, we were like, "All right, who's driving the first leg to Paducah?" And I was like, "Yeah, Paducah."
Well, for all we know, it is supposed to be pronounced Paducah.
Yeah.
Just like other cities in Kentucky, we Monticello.
Versailles.
Versailles.
Paris.
Uno.
Louisville. Yeah. Louisville. Thank you, Tanner. That was awesome. Incredible. It's one of those things that I wonder if it was an improvised tune or if it was an ancient tune that had some sort of ritualistic song to it, and if it was something that if you heard again, would it trigger you?
Did it go,
you
know? Woo, woo, woo?
Yeah. Bing, bing, bing.
Bing, yeah.
I gotcha. Hashtag hell year.
Yeah.
Again, thank you, Tanner, for sharing your story with us. Send all your stories to us, fearscapepodcast@gmail.com. We wants them. We wants them all. Yeah.
A little bit of Gollum there for
you. Yeah. Yes, man, give me your stories. It's precious. But we're going to get out of here. Josh, you need to read the X-Men Hellfire Club. This is during the Dark Phoenix sagas where they first showed up. You're welcome. You can just watch the old X-Men cartoon. It was on there.
Okay.
You're good to go. But thank you guys so much for tuning in. This has been a really fun episode. There was a lot of creepy catch-up and news to go over. And sometimes that's okay. But yeah, make sure that you guys are tuning in to our new YouTube channel on youtube.com/FearscapeMedia. There you can find our new YouTube show called Fearscape Unhinged. We've got one episode out so far. It's basically just Josh and I sharing our theories on things that we don't get a lot an opportunity to do as much on this time because we're constrained a little bit. And this is just a little free form. We talked about ghosts. We got an upcoming episode on the intergalactic superhighway, as well as religion and some things of that nature. So be on the lookout for that. Make sure to subscribe to that and any other. Josh sometimes puts his thoughts on there, and I may do the same. But yeah, our YouTube channel. Thank you guys so much for the growth that we've seen over the past 2 weeks. So many of our fans helped us hit over 100 subscribes in less than 2 days. Trying to help us get that URL. And we're so thankful to all of our blanket huggers out there. Speaking of blanket huggers, don't forget we've got our online store. If you go to fearscapepodcast.com, where you can get your t-shirts and mugs or whatever you want. Get your Fearscape merch. And Josh, tell them about our Patreon as well.
Yes, we've got 4 tiers on Patreon. It starts at, I think, $5 and goes up to $50. We probably won't ever get it.
Yeah, for those of you guys that don't know, Patreon, it's just a monthly support system to help us, you know, get the things that we need. You know, we've had to, since leaving WCHQ, we've had to get our own home studio and things of that nature. And it helps us get better equipment, better software, you know.
Yeah, and we'd like to be able to do some actual kind of in-the-field research.
Yeah, I know,
to bring to you guys.
We are going to be trying to go to Point Pleasant this spring or this summer to visit the Mothman stuff, and you know, it would be very helpful, you know, to help fund some of that, you know.
Exactly. So anyways, there's 4 tiers, and I think the 3rd and the 4th tier, you also get a free t-shirt of your choosing from our store.
Yep, any one of them. So check that out, patreon.com/fearscapepod. Is that correct?
Actually, you could just go to our website.
Oh, the Patreon is on
there? And it links over.
Yep. Great, yeah, so go to our website for everything because it's there. Other than that, let's get out of here unless you have any other announcements or anything of that nature. Thank you so much for tuning in. This has been Stefan, and I will catch you on the flip side.
This has been Josh. The truth is out there.
And remember, folks, hold those blankets extra tight because things tend to get spooky. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
I'm so glad you were able to join us for that horrifying discussion. I hope they didn't frighten you too much. Tune in next week for even more research into the nightmarish and haunting creeps and spooks that we tell ourselves don't exist, but we know they do. Make sure you have your blankets, that you hold them extra tight. Next time on Fearscape.